This is beauty and fashion photographer Patrick D. Simmons, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 87. Okay, so now they're serious. In this episode, Nat Geo wants to rebuild its cred, rumored specs of the Canon 5D Mark IV, iFi drops a bomb on its customers, a new manual focus lens is out, a smartphone company gets caught, and DJI's latest update helps you not to do stupid things with your drone. All that and more in episode 87 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Patrick, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Patrick D. Simmons is a Chicago-based photographer who, among other things, shoots for cosmetic lines, skincare campaigns, beauty editorials, and more. His work has appeared in many fashion and beauty magazines, and when you visit his site at patrickdsimmons.com, you'll see why. Patrick is very good at what he does, and if you enjoy fashion photography and portraiture, you'll really enjoy his photography, so make sure you check out his website. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 87 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button, making sure you get every episode of this podcast, and following along with us. We thank you so much for that. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. It's really annoying when you assume a publication holds themselves to the highest of standards, only to find out that they really don't. It's kind of like finding out that Steve McCurry hasn't considered himself a photojournalist in a long, long time, which was news to everyone and also very convenient. Way back in February of 1982, National Geographic's cover featured a photograph by photographer Gordon Gahan, which showed a few men riding camels with pyramids in the distance. It was a beautiful photo, but it wasn't exactly all real. Well, it was, but it was altered. The original photo was shot in landscape orientation, and I think that most of us probably would have shot it that way because it really begged for a horizontal orientation there. But the magazine wanted to use that photo on its cover, and of course, they needed a vertical. All right, so no problem. You crop it vertically, and not only do you get three of the four men and their camels in a nice grouping, actually, you also get both pyramids. One is behind the other, of course, and since it was shot with a long lens, you get nice compression, everything fits nicely in the frame. But you see, the photo isn't actually ideal, or at least that's what they thought. When you crop this particular photo vertically, the pyramid that's further back on the left side of the photo is barely in the frame, just a small portion of it is. You know it's a pyramid, mind you, but it's just kind of there. So what did Nat Geo do back then? They used the fancy new Cytex technology and moved the pyramid on the left further to the right. So now on the cover, you see the flattened top of that pyramid that's on the left and the downslope to the left of it. Whereas before, you just saw the upslope from the right side of that pyramid. I hope you guys can picture that. If not, hit the show notes for episode 87 at petapixel.com/podcast and you can see the photos. Honestly, today, I think many people would make that edit and just call it good. No one would know the difference, and sadly, not many people would care. But I'm old school. As a retired photojournalist myself, you just don't do those things. Sure, this photographer could have positioned the one pyramid behind the other more closely by moving about 100 feet or so to the right, but then that would have changed the positioning of the camels and the riders, and who knows how long he had to make this happen. Did they just come upon the scene and he shot it, or did he stage it as Steve McCurry is alleged to have done? As a photojournalist, you shoot what's in front of you, as the old saying goes. You're presented with a scene, and you shoot what is there. You don't shoot it and then mess with it later on the computer. That's just not supposed to be done. What National Geographic did back then was wrong. But you know what? It didn't change things in a way that would have altered reality to the point that people thought differently about what they were seeing. It was just a different perspective on the two pyramids. In other words, people weren't added or removed from a scene, thus altering a historic moment and changing how people think about something, something that has a lot of importance, not a shot of a couple pyramids and some camels and their riders. But still, it was wrong, and they know that. They took a lot of heat for it back in 1982 and vowed to make changes. yet they can only go by what photographers submit to them and take their word that a scene wasn't staged. Now, this was a lot easier to do back in the days where you had the negatives or the slide film, and this wasn't the digital era where people could just mess with a photo and go, here you go, here's my frame. In light of the McCurry scandal, Nat Geo published an article in the July 2016 issue and online entitled, How We Spot Altered Pictures. The magazine's editor-in-chief, Susan Goldberg, says, quote, at National Geographic, it's never okay to alter a photo. We've made it part of our mission to ensure our photos are real, end quote. To that end, they now require that photojournalists and Steve McCurry submit raw files of anything they send in so they can be scrutinized. And according to Goldberg, quote, if a raw file isn't available, we ask detailed questions about the photo, and yes, sometimes what we learn leads us to reject it, end quote. I mean, think about that for a second. You've got people that are shooting for National Geographic and submitting to National Geographic for publication online and in their magazine, and apparently a lot of them are still screwing with the photos. Isn't that just wonderful? After all these controversies, they're still trying to get away with it. Amazing. Nat Geo now asks a key question of any image they publish, and that is, quote, is this photo a good representation of what the photographer saw? For us as journalists, that answer always must be yes, end quote. And this brings up a good point, I think. You really never know what the photographer saw, and many times, honestly, the photographer can't tell you with 100% certainty. They just can't. For instance, if you follow me on social media, and I'm lens shark everywhere, by the way, this week you saw me post a couple of photos that I shot during a big 4th of July rodeo back when I was a photojournalist in 2012. I shot that same rodeo for years and knew that toward the end and before the bull riding event happened, they would have the fireworks show. For a solid 4 years in a row, I positioned myself to get a silhouette of the stands with the cowboys and such against the fireworks, but they were never in the right position and I wasn't able to get into position to make that work. Not the image that I had in my head, at least. But then in 2012, in addition to the fireworks that shoot high into the air, they had some of the lower variety and bingo, a wall of fireworks directly behind those in the stands, along with the more traditional fireworks that were above them. Finally, I had the photo that I had envisioned in my head for years. In fact, that photo and a couple of the alternates are some of my all-time favorite photos. Now, as a photojournalist, as I'm shooting those photos that night, I'm trying to remember in my mind's eye exactly what the scene looked like because I know that later I'm going to be on the computer and I'm going to have to try to make it represent what I actually saw, not what I'm interpreting it to be. I was shooting raw files, and those aren't exactly perfect straight out of camera. You get them back on your computer, and they're rarely exactly how they were in reality. So what do you do? If you're not a photojournalist, or one without high standards, or maybe your name is Steve, you have at it and you interpret the photo as you wish. No harm, no foul. Well, if you're a photojournalist, there's harm. But that's a whole other matter, of course. Now, if you do care, and I think you guys know that I do care about these things, you adjust the photo in accordance with journalistic guidelines, and that varies from paper to paper and from magazine to magazine, unfortunately, but it does. You process that photo and you try to make it look as close to how you remember it when you shot it. And you know what? You don't always get it right. No one is perfect, but you try to do your best. What's really important is intent, of course. That counts for a lot in my book. Is a photographer or magazine altering a photo to fit a different orientation or tell a different story? Or are they merely adjusting a photo and hope to get it right? It's all over the place, and in the age of Photoshop, everyone's altering their images, it seems, and those images are getting harder and harder to trust. You just don't know what to believe anymore. With any luck, this is in the rearview mirror now, but I have a feeling that we're going to see additional things come up in the future, because that's how these things tend to work. Next. If you've been eyeing the Canon 5D Mark III, you might want to hold off on making a purchase, because we expect the 5D Mark IV to be announced no later than this September at the big Photokina trade show in Germany. And actually, we're hearing that we might see it as early as late July or sometime in August. According to our friends at Canon Rumors, the update to this great camera, according to a reliable source of theirs, will feature card slots for both CFast 2.0 as well as SDXC USC Mark II. If true, this would indicate that the 5D Mark IV will indeed be able to shoot 4K video internally, something that Canon must include at this point to stay relevant. They can't just hoard that stuff for their cinema line of cameras anymore. So a lot of people are going to be insanely happy about that. And of course, with the faster cards means better buffers to go along with them. So if you're shooting stills and you're pushing a lot of frames, it'll be a good long while before you hit the limit. This body, of course, has been a favorite among wedding shooters for many years now, and actually kicked off the DSLR video revolution. Now, you'll recall that many photographers complained about this useful new feature, we're talking shooting video with a DSLR, and now most of them are making use of it. So there's that. Many of those same people have realized that there's more money to be made in shooting video than stills these days. And personally, I think it's a great skill to have and one more thing that you can charge for. And it's also another way to tell a story. And we're visual storytellers, right? And remember, if you're not at all interested in shooting 4K video and all the usual updates that are going to be in this body once it comes out, nothing earth-shattering, you know, we're talking ISO improvements, etc., you're going to be able to get a great deal on the Mark III once the Mark IV comes out. So that's another reason to hold out. Next. Recently, I told you about how iFi sold its cloud service to Ricoh. Well, just days after that was announced, iFi sent an email out to its customers letting them know that their older X1 and X2 cards, in other words, everything prior to the new Mobi line, would have an end-of-life date of September 16th, 2016. So, especially if you purchased one of these cards not too long ago, this is not very good news. According to the company, quote, iFi began phasing out sales of the X2 product line in 2012. The last version produced by the company were sold through authorized channels in the United States in March of 2015, end quote. So if you purchase an X2 card, for instance, after March of 2015, chances are good that it was from an unauthorized reseller. And you're not too happy right now. Come September 16th, 2016, and all you future people out there that are listening to this, get back to your jetpacks and hoverboards. This doesn't concern you. You'll no longer be able to create an iFi Center account, and that's important because that's kind of required for X1 and X2 cards to operate. So people are saying that some functions of the X2 card, like direct mode, may continue to work after the end of life date, but it would need to be set up prior to that September 16th mark. Selective transfer will also function if it's enabled before then, but relayed transfer will not. Now, relayed transfer uses their servers, I believe, so if you think about that, that makes a lot of sense there. And since these cards are being EOL'd, the software for the older cards will no longer be updated nor supported. You know, think Windows 95 here. At some point, these companies just move on, but in this case, these cards aren't terribly old, and presumably a ton of people still have them and are using them. The cynical, of course, see this as a move to force people to buy their latest and greatest. I'll leave that up to you to decide, but that's awfully interesting, I think. You know, they sell off their cloud service to Ricoh, which brings them some money. Then they drop support for their older cards, which would cause a whole lot of people to have to buy their newer cards. Again, more money. Tons of cameras have Wi-Fi built in. And as I've said here recently on the podcast, iFi doesn't seem as relevant as it once was. That's just my personal opinion. There's not much need for an iFi card if you already have Wi-Fi in your camera. The internets aren't at all happy about the bricking of the X1 and X2 cards, and they haven't at all been shy about voicing their displeasure about this online. One of them saying, quote, "Receiving your email about removing support for X2 cards this morning made me furious. That your company would have the gall to sell cards that would be obsolete within a few years is preposterous. I would have updated to the Mobi cards in time anyway, but out of principle, I will avoid iFi products in the future and advise my photographing friends to do the same. Shame on your company," end quote. Ouch. And that was just one of the ones that I can read here. A lot of them were not as kind as that. According to the company, the reason for the EOL order is that the older wireless and encryption technologies are no longer safe nor appropriate. So I guess what you have to do is get their newer cards, or it's peace out, iFi. Now, if you have one of their older cards, the X1s and the X2s, and you want to move up to a new iFi Mobi, they're offering a 20% discount for up to 3 cards. But if you're sore about having to buy new cards, maybe you'll take your business elsewhere now. I don't know what their financial situation is like over there, but many think that maybe it's iFi that's end of life, or will be after this move. Time will tell. Next. Autofocus is awesome, and it has its place, of course. But there are many instances when it's not necessary, and a manual focus lens will do. Especially if you have a mirrorless body and you have focus peaking, and it shows you what's in focus and what's not, and you don't have to eyeball it. So with that in mind, Meyer Optic has released a new lens designed for portrait shooters who don't mind manually focusing, and it looks pretty cool. The new lens from this company is their Trimagon 95mm f2.6, what they're calling a, quote, dynamic modern lens, end quote. Now, surprisingly, it uses just three elements, and that is super simple because these days, you know, you're talking 12 to like 19 elements in a lens, depending on what type it is. So three is kind of surprising. And that's not necessarily a good thing. We're going to see when this thing's out there in the wild. Maybe it needs additional elements. We'll see. You may recall me previously telling you about this company's 100mm and 50mm trioplane lenses, which have that incredible soap bubble bokeh that so many people desire. This lens, however, doesn't do that. This one is designed for portrait photographers who, quote, value artistic composition, end quote. It has unique lens coatings and high-quality glass to reduce flare, and thanks to its 15 aperture blades, has what the company refers to as a pleasing circular bokeh. That's their words. Now, they're claiming that this lens is incredibly sharp and can resolve more than 60 million pixels, so when ridiculously high megapixel cameras come out, more than the Canon 5DS and 5DSR, that is, this lens, they're saying, would be perfect on them. Photographer and author Alexander Henry has used this lens, and he says that it, quote, significantly reduces the amount of post-production required, end quote. Now, if you're in Germany, you may know that this lens has already been available, but it's now available in the United States in Canon EF, Nikon F, Sony E, Leica M, and Micro Four Thirds mounts for $1,700 US. Yeah, that's a good chunk of change there. A 95mm f2.6 manual focus lens for $1,700 US. Start saving now, folks. Now, if you'd like to check this lens out and all of this sounds good to you, hit the link in our show notes and we'll have that for you. Next. I think it's amusing when companies try to pass off a photo having been shot with their product when entirely other gear was used for it. And such is what happened recently when it was discovered that smartphone maker Huawei used a photo shot with a Canon DSLR rather than their P9 phone, as the ad would kind of suggest. And by kind of, I mean heavily suggest. They posted a photo to their Google Plus page, among other places online and social media, showing what could be done with their new Leica-engineered dual-camera P9 smartphone, but it didn't take long for people to discover EXIF data that's in there for the photo that shows on Google Plus pages revealed that it was actually shot with a Canon 5D Mark III and a Canon 70-200mm f2.8. So, yeah, not cool. Before Huawei was able to remove this from social media, the Android police website folks spotted it and went ahead and screenshotted it and posted about it on their website. Now, Huawei didn't specifically say that this photo was shot with their P9 phone that they were advertising, but one would naturally draw that conclusion, of course. I mean, the text along with the photo read, quote, "We managed to catch a beautiful sunrise with deliciously Ella. The hashtag Huawei P9's dual Leica cameras makes taking photos in low light conditions like this a pleasure. Reinvent smartphone photography and share your sunrise pictures with us," end quote. So I seriously doubt that anyone would draw a conclusion other than this being an ad for the phone and that the photo was taken with it. Now, of course, by a pro, because that's what they do. They don't just hand it to an amateur. They put it in the hands of someone who knows photography and can get the best out of it. But at least you would think it was shot with the phone, not a professional camera and lens costing many thousands of dollars. Well, Huawei issued a statement which reads, quote, "It has recently been highlighted that an image posted to our social channels was not shot on the Huawei P9. The photo, which was professionally taken while filming a Huawei P9 advert, was shared to inspire our community. We recognize, though, that we should have been clear with the captions for this image. It was never our intention to mislead. We apologize for this, and we have removed the image," end quote. Now, it's up to you to decide if this was done on purpose or not, but Huawei is a ginormous corporation, and they, of course, have advertising teams, advertising agencies that do this. This isn't someone on their social media team that just decided to throw together some text and a photo. These things are all planned out. So there's that. We've seen some really cool photos that were purported to have been taken with the P9, but after this, one wonders. This is kind of, sort of, but not exactly like those wedding photographers we all know who use photos shot by other photographers to promote their own services. But they're nowhere near that good. You know, that's just lame. Next. Drones, good. Drones near wildfires, airports, etc. Not good. I don't know why people don't understand that. Stay the heck away from those things and you'll be okay. It's just not worth risking anyone's lives. I mean, don't be that person. Besides, you spoil the fun for the rest of us. You know? Not cool. And to that end, drone giant DJI has just updated their geofencing system to better keep people away from stuff like nuclear power plants, prisons, national security events, wildfires, and so much more. You know, those are all obvious things to most of us. But some people, apparently, not so much. And what you don't hear about are all the incursions that happen when drone operators fly into places they shouldn't be and have no idea that they're actually in a sensitive area. You know, it's super easy to get disoriented when you're on the ground and looking at video on your smartphone or tablet, and you just don't know exactly what your drone is flying over. I mean, unless you're a pilot, you're not used to seeing things from that perspective. Some people have inadvertently flown over secure government sites and other places that were only accessible from the ground, but now with drone technology, they're 20 feet or so above these places. So you're going to see more and more of these sensitive sites mapped out and geofenced, because that is a necessity. If you're not familiar with geofencing, it's software that keeps you from doing stupid things like flying over these areas. And sometimes these are going to be situations, events, rather than places per se, such as wildfires and the like. Again, flying drones around a wildfire is just stupid. Now, you're going to get pretty video that you can never use, of course, because you're documenting your crime. But you're also risking the lives of aerial firefighters, and sometimes they have to call those aircraft back to the airport, and fires end up getting out of control because a drone threat was in the area, and they have to remove that first. You know, these firefighting aircraft fly very low over forest fires, and people are flying their drones around them, and that is just not a good situation. So included in the latest version of the DJI Go app is a more comprehensive geofencing of sensitive sites, and the app will automatically update with restrictions that are more time-based, such as sporting events, national security events, such as when the president's in town, etc., and things like wildfires and other natural disasters. There's also provisions for areas that can be unlocked by verified DJI accounts, while others, such as all of Washington, D.C., are permanently locked down, of course. According to DJI's Vice President of Policy and Legal Affairs, Brendan Schulman, quote, "Safety is DJI's top priority, which is why we first introduced geofencing technology 3 years ago and have been steadily refining the industry's best technology to enhance aviation safety. Drone pilots want to fly safely, and our geo system helps DJI customers fly responsibly," end quote. Now, this update works with all DJI Inspire, Phantom 4, Phantom 3 Professional, and Phantom 3 Advanced models, but to get it, you'll need to update the DJI Go app and the firmware for the controller and the drone. Listen, the responsible people will keep this all up to date and do the right thing. They know how to fly their drone, they know where to fly it, they know where not to fly it, but there are fools out there that have more money than sense, as I've said before. They'll do as they please, and sadly, they're going to put others' lives at risk. And it's just a matter of time before someone gets killed because they were reckless with their drone. You know, we don't like these people. They break the rules, they don't care about it, they don't think the rules apply to them. The rest of us follow the rules, and they're a danger. So let's hope they don't kill anybody. And in the meantime, we can enjoy our drones and be responsible. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 87 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lenshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lenshark. That's LenSshark. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 88. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
According to the company, the reason for the EOL order is that the older wireless and encryption technologies are no longer safe, nor...
Safe. You hear that? That's my voice cracking.
That kind of sounded a little bit like Bill Clinton right there. That was kind of weird. If you've been eyeing the candy... Candy? Who doesn't eye candy is what I say. Candy. You also get both pyramids and an airplane flying behind me.
This is what my life has become.
Waiting for airplanes.